14, text is 23. Kindly repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayamudirayet. Nashta Praishu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishthiki. Krishne Swadhamo Pagate. Dhanamagnanadhipesaha. Kalau Nashtradrisham Esha. Puranarkodhuno Ditaha. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Vena Uvacha. Balisha Batayuyam Va. Atharame Dharma Maninaha. Ye Vritti Dampatim Hitva. Jaram Patim Upasate. Balisha Hata Yuyam Va. Atharame Dharma Maninaha. Ye Vritti Dampatim Hitva. Jaram Patim Upasate. Balisha Bata Yuyam Va. Atharame Dharma Maninaha. Ye Vritti Dampatim Hitva. Jaram Patim Upasate. Venu Vacha. Balisha Bata Yuyam Va. Adhaname Dhanama Maninaha. Ye Vritti Dampatim Hitva. Jaram Patim Upasate. Venurvacha. Balisha Bata Yuyam Va. Adhaname Dhanama Maninaha. Ye Vritti Dampatim Hitva. Jaram Patim Upasate. Balisha Bata Yuyam Va. Adharame Dharma Maninaha. Ye Vritti Dampatim Hitva. Jaram Patim Upasate. Vena Uvacha. Balisha Bata Yuyam Va. Adharame Dharma Maninaha. Ye Vritti Dampatim Hitva. Jaram Patim Upasate. Vena. King Vena. Uvacha. Replied. Balishaha. Childish. Bata. Oh. Yuyam. All of you. Va, indeed. Adharme, in irreligious principles. Dharma maninaha, accepting as religious. Ye, all of you who, vrittidam, providing maintenance. Patim, husband. Hitwa, giving up. Jaram, paramour. Patim, husband. Upasate, worship. Translation. King Vena replied, "You are not at all experienced. It is very much regrettable that you are maintaining something which is not religious and are accepting it as religious. Indeed, I think you are giving up your real husband who maintains you and searching after some paramour to worship." Kindly replied. King Vena replied, "You are not at all experienced. It's very much regrettable that you are maintaining something which is not religious and are accepting it as religious. Indeed, I think you are giving up your real husband who maintains you and are searching after some paramour to worship." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Vena was so foolish that he accused the saintly sages of being inexperienced like small children. In other words, he was accusing them of not having perfect knowledge. In this way, he could reject their advice and make accusations against them. Comparing them to a woman who does not care for her husband, who maintains her, but goes to satisfy a paramour who does not maintain her. The purpose of this simile is apparent. It is the duty of the kshatriyas to engage the brahmanas in different types of religious activities. And the king is supposed to be the maintainer of the brahmanas. If the brahmanas do not worship the king, but instead go to the demigods, they are as polluted as unchaste women. Om gnana timirantasya gnananjana shilakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namah mukam kuroti vachalam pangum lankhayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri gurum dinataranam. King Vena replied, "You are not at all experienced. It's very much regrettable that you are maintaining something which is not religious and are accepting it as religious. Indeed, I think you're giving up your real husband who maintains you and are searching after some paramour to worship." So the context here is, of course, throughout the Puranas and Vedic literature in general and corollary literature as well, we have many stories within stories within stories within stories. So here we actually have Suta Goswami speaking to the sages at Naimisharanya, headed by Shaunaka Rishi, but he's describing a conversation that occurred between Vidura and Maitreya. Maitreya had approached Uddhava to ask him his questions, and Uddhava referred him to Maitreya, who was senior. And within that discussion now, we have there was the story of Dhruva Maharaj was discussed and his descendants. Narad Muni had glorified the Prachetas as well. We'd heard about Maharaj Anga, who was very pious, but somehow, because he was married with Sunita, he had this unqualified son. Prabhupada comments there. It's because the son takes after the mother, and the mother was daughter of death. So now we have Vena. The sages had installed Vena because you have to have some sort of a king. The sages, their business is to preach, to perform sacrifices, to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the nature of preaching is that there are results. People want to surrender. And when you get people who want to surrender, this has to be managed. So the need for kshatriyas is there. So Maharaj Anga, actually Utkala was before him, and he didn't want to deal with this at all. He was an Avadhuta, you can say. But anyway, Maharaj Anga was very responsible king, very pious king, but he didn't have a son. And he worshipped the Supreme Lord to get a son, and that son happened to be Vena. Things are so touchy in material existence that even we have the best of intentions, and even we have the best character, and even we have good guidance, still things can go wrong. As Prabhupada says, there are accidents even on royal roads. So somehow or other, because of his fate, his karma, you can say, Maharaj Anga was blessed with a son like Vena. You've already heard his realizations about that, Maharaj Anga's realizations. He became so much disturbed by this son that he simply gave up all household life altogether and went to the forest to cultivate Krishna consciousness. That's why he was blessed. Sometimes we get blessings in disguise. So anyway, here we have these sages. They were lamenting over the fact that we have installed this person, Vena, because of the lag somebody has to manage. And we've installed this unqualified person, Vena, as the king. But now the king himself, who's supposed to be managing the results of our preaching, now he's the one causing so many disturbances. We've seen this. We've all seen this kind of thing. So anyway, Vena has now that they've given him good instructions, tried to give him good instructions. They said, be nice, follow dharma, encourage your citizens to execute their varna dharmas and their ashram dharmas, and encourage the brahmanas, allow the brahmanas to do sacrifices and to worship the Supreme Lord in this way. They were trying to give good advice for what we call purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. In ordinary human society, no one can be happy without dharma, and no one can do anything without artha. No one wants to do anything without kama, and it's all useless without moksha. So these are called the four goals of humankind, and it's the duty of civilized leaders, especially religious leaders, more so spiritual leaders, to encourage this kind of thing. So they tried to give him good instructions, although they were furious with him because he was disallowing the brahmanas to perform their sacrifices. He had this idea that I'm the king, and the king is the representative of God, so people have to worship me. This is a perennial problem with all kinds of representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We actually have there's some confusion here created by the Absolute Truth, believe it or not, because the Absolute Truth we call Achintya Bheda Bheda, inconceivable identity and difference. The king, although he may be an ordinary man, he's also regarded as the Supreme Person, or at least a representative of the Supreme Person. In a similar way, the spiritual master, yesterday we were glorifying Srila Prabhupada, he is regarded by Krishna, none less than Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, as a Prakash Sarup, the essential being of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but as a devotee. Or there are so many examples. The deity, we all know, Prabhupada said, Jagannath is made out of wood. The deity is made out of stone or metal. But he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are all Achintya Bheda Bhedas. And this is the Absolute Truth. And in fact, all kinds of arguments, if anyone has noticed any controversies or arguments, because this is the age of controversy and argument, it's because of this thing. It's because of this principle. Everything is fundamentally Achintya to us because we have a limited point of view. That's why we have to accept spiritual masters to begin with. So sometimes spiritual masters also go off like this. There's one Vaishnava Sampradaya. They have this problem quite a bit. Because they're monists, they emphasize the divinity of the spiritual master more. There are Vaishnava monists, believe it or not. And the result of that is that throughout history, there are charges have shown a tendency to become profligates, to try to enjoy with even the wives of their disciples, etc. Scandals are there. On the other hand, you have Christianity, other Abrahamic traditions, in which there's absolutely no recognition of the fact that anyone can possibly represent the Supreme Lord authoritatively and fully in this world, in flesh and blood, as it were. So they also err. And the Ritvik, our Ritvik friends, also go into that category as much as is possible for Vaishnavas, like the Sikhs before them. These ideologies are nothing new, actually, because they reincarnate themselves as much as the people who propagate them do. So, anyway, here we have Vena. He's also caught up in this mentality of Advaita, too much oneness. Who arbitrates how much duality is applicable in a given time, place, and circumstance, and how much oneness is? How do we know? Only by the directions of a bona fide spiritual master. That's why Srila Prabhupada says, someone who doesn't have a spiritual master is rudderless in the ocean of philosophical controversy and material existence even. So the spiritual master has to be that person. And as the Mahabharata confirms, what is that? Tartako pratishtha shrutayo vibhinna. Na savrishir yasya matam nabhinnam. Dhanamasya tatvasya nihitam guhayam. Mahajano yena gatasya pantha. The argument alone can never conclude anything, because for any argument you always have the antithesis is equally valid, that I've already hinted at. This is a chintya bheda bheda. And even the Shruti mantras, therefore, they say different things, or at least appear to say different things. And no one can establish himself as a rishi unless he argues something novel, something appealing, something fresh, something, these Kashmir Shaivas, they have a nice word for this. Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means recognition. They recognize. When we hear something that strikes us as true, it's a kind of a recognition. The absolute truth is within all of us. We know it. It's not separate from us. Nitya siddha krishna prema sadhya kabhunai. Shravanada shuddha chitte karaye udai. So when we hear something that sounds right, it's a kind of a recognition. But anyway, these rishis, everybody has their spin on this, what's happening. Or as Krishna says, there are as many world views wafting through the air as the air is carrying so many aromas. So many, Weltanschauungen, as the Germans would say. Yasya rishir nasav, what is it? Nasav rishir yasya matam nabhinnam. Someone cannot even establish himself. Even in the university, you don't get a PhD unless you say something new and original. We value this very much. This is a particularly prominent in Western civilization. In Indian civilization, you don't get any recognition unless you say something old. So we find, for example, in music, classical music, Hindustani Shastriya Sangeet, that the Shastrakaras, the persons who wrote the Shastras that describe music, they very faithfully repeat the teachings of their predecessors, even though that has absolutely nothing to do with current practice. Because that's the appeal. You have to demonstrate that you have some paramparagat value. You're coming in parampara. You're saying something bona fide. Anyway, but the real truth of dharma, this is what we're getting at, That has to be hidden within the heart of the unadulterated pure devotee. Therefore, Mahabharata concludes, the real path is that which is advocated by the Mahajanas, the great souls. And particularly in the world of bhakti, we have our 12 Mahajanas, who are described in the sixth canto. And Vena is not one of them. Neither is he submissive to hearing from them, because he's too much into this Advaita mentality that I am the representative, I'm the authority here, I'm the king. What he's saying is not incorrect. We have to appreciate this. He's not incorrect. But he has overemphasized inappropriately as a result of not having proper spiritual guidance or not accepting that proper spiritual guidance. The persons who really have the problem here, I would say, are the sages. There was a fight between the sages and the ministers, as there often is. Because the ministers had to deal with the hands-on. They had to guide practically the king in terms of what to do. So they didn't want him to be installed. They knew that we're going to have to be the ones who deal with this on a day-to-day basis if Vena is installed as the king. And we don't want to have to deal with that because this is a difficult person. We know. We remember hearing when he was a kid, he used to kill his friends in sport. Difficult personality. You think you have difficult people in your life? Think about these poor sages. So anyway, so these sages, they actually, they're the ones who put him here. So they really have the problem. And they're the ones who are going to ultimately have to solve this situation. Of course, we've already heard in synopsis, eventually they do kill him. Just after they hear him say this sort of thing, as a matter of fact. They thought, okay, he's over the top now. We've got to get rid of this guy. It's you know, time. This is an idea whose time has come. And so, hunkritai, through high-sounding words, they dispatched him to the abode of Yamaraj. So, Vena is misguided. He's unlucky. He's disturbed. He has all these characteristics that we're all familiar with intimately in this day and age. And he specifically uses this simile, ye vrittidam patim hitva jaram patim upasate. You have a husband who's maintaining you. That's me, pati. The king is also called Nripati, Narapati, the husband of the people, as it were. Husband, another name of, there are many synonyms for almost any word in Sanskrit. Pati is one of them. Bhartri, the maintainer, the person who supplies all of your needs. It's just like Krishna, as a matter of fact. Ego bahunam yo vididhati kaman. The person who is supplying all the needs of the part and parcel jivas is the supreme vibhuatma. We are anuatma, he's vibhuatma. The supreme self, the supreme soul, the supreme atma. We're all atmas, but he is the supreme one. And he is, in effect, our husband. Therefore, he's called pati. Whether the husband is called pati because he represents God, or whether God is the called pati because he supplies the maintenance, he maintains us as a husband would, it's hard to say. It's an eternal reality. But anyway, Vena is overwhelmed with this ego, false ego, in identifying himself too much with his prerogative. In Sanskrit, we have a nice word, adhikar, which I like to translate as prerogative, because prerogative implies two related concepts. One of them is a qualification, the ability to do something, and another one is the right to do that thing, and the right to enjoy or exact appropriate facilities that are necessary for fulfilling that prerogative. Sometimes we translate it as qualification or right. There are rights and there are duties, as Mahatma Gandhi said. And people who are materialistic generally concern themselves more with rights, and people who are more pious concern themselves more with duty. But this nice word, adhikar, it kind of straddles those two. It subsumes those two meanings within one simple words. So a lot of Sanskrit words are like that, as a matter of fact. That's why they're so difficult to translate. Dharma itself is like that. Here the word is dharma manina. Adharma dharma manina. He's thinking that you think you people know all about religion, you're experts in religion, but actually you're situated in adharma. This is an interesting claim from Vena. How long do I go on speaking? 8:15, okay. It's the nature of faithless demons that they feel that devotees or anyone who's Krishna conscious or anyone who's even approaching Krishna consciousness is in Maya. That's what they think. They're very calmly convinced that the devotees are in Maya and that they require better guidance. This was Hiranyakashipu's position with Prahlad Maharaj. This was Ravana's position. He felt completely justified with everything he was doing. After all, he had conquered just about everyone in sight. So Vena's, he has this mentality. He feels that he is the arbiter of dharma. Even though, as we've just described, the conclusion of Mahabharata, that it is the Mahajanas who are able to do that. Able and authorized as well to do that. So the word dharma, it means, it has several aspects. Sometimes we translate it variously, therefore. Sometimes we say it means duty. You've heard this, dharma. Sometimes it means religion. Sometimes it even means intrinsic function, like swarup, lakshana, the characteristic, the property of a given thing. We say the dharma of water is to be wet. The dharma of sugar is to be sweet. The dharma, the jiva dharma, the living entity's dharma, is to serve, particularly to serve Bhagavan. So it's a touchy subject, dharma. And like many other Sanskrit words, it subsumes many various meanings within one broad category. So he thought he was an expert in dharma, and he didn't listen to those who actually were. Instead, Balisha, your children. Sridhar Swami, all the acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, everyone, as far as I can tell, they all, commenting on this verse, they say Balisha means foolish, agnya. And vrittidam means annadipradam, the person who gives you grains, the person who feeds you. In modern parlance, we might say the person who signs your paycheck. But Prabhupada says, there's a nice purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, don't think that the source of your paycheck is the source of your maintenance. Confirmed. The source of your maintenance is not necessarily the same thing as the source of your paycheck. The paycheck is a piece of paper or plastic, if you have direct deposit. You cannot eat it. You need anna. Nad bhavanti bhutani. We are all subsisting on account of food grains. Now, the demons are always very eager to take over the position of the demigods or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now we see that they're also doing this. There was several years ago, even quite a while ago now, actually, it was about 10 years ago, all these farmers' unions in Karnataka, South India, they got together and they formulated a class action lawsuit against Monsanto Corporation, because Monsanto Corporation was trying to introduce these Terminator seeds to the agriculturalists there. It's very convenient. On faith, we are to believe that these things are disease resistant. In reality, it's been documented that they're not always everything they're cracked up to be. But they wanted to do this, and the farmers, they all got together and said, no, we don't have faith in you. We have faith in Bhagavan. And they rejected it. So there are people in this world now who would like to be the Anadi Pradas, the distributors of grains. There are people in this world, in fact, they've been experimenting for many years, trying to manipulate the magnetic poles of this planet, presumed magnetic poles of this planet, to change weather. This is the business of Vayu and Indra and other demigods. Just as Hiranyakashipu and Ravana and other demons of yore, there are very ambitious, successful people in this mature world. I used to live in Seattle, and I saw there was a poster in the university district in Seattle. It had a picture of Bill Gates, and it had a barcode underneath him, and it said, Big Brother is watching you. No further comment is necessary. There are people in this world who would like to oust the demigods and take over their positions. And these are the demons. Silvana was of this class. And because he was not submissive to those who were spiritually pure and well directed, better directed, who were authorized, and who were thinking of the welfare of the living entities, of all living entities. We remember a few verses previously, we saw that devotees are generally not inclined towards so much social activism, but these sages saw fit to actually become involved because they saw the people were suffering. So the devotees have the spirit of swasti astu vishvasya kala prasidatam jayantu bhutani shivam mithodhya manascha bhadram bhajatad dhokshaje avesyatam no matirapya haitaki. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. If you go to Mathura and see Krishna's Janmasthan, you'll see this verse written on top of the doorway of the temple there. May all beings in this universe be auspicious. May all the envious rascals be pacified. May all living entities think of each other's welfare and be absorbed in auspicious thought, noble thoughts, as a result of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead at Hokshija. May all of us causelessly enter deeper and deeper and deeper into this mood. No one but Prahlad Maharaj, I think, could express such a sentiment as this. So, the sages actually had this at heart, but Vena Maharaj was thinking, he was bewildered. He was bewildered by false ego, and that impelled him to twist and twangle the philosophy inappropriately, too much towards the Advaita side, in which he saw himself as the supreme despot. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his writings, often refers to Lord Krishna as the transcendental autocrat. I've seen him even use the word despot before to indicate the degree to which Krishna is completely free to do anything and everything with any one of us. You cannot fight it. That's what it means to be a dependent, minute, a part and parcel of the Supreme Person. But Krishna's nice, unlike Vena. Krishna doesn't kill his friends. Krishna has only our welfare at heart. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. So Vena has just begun his rebuttal to the good instructions of the sages. It's quite clear at the very outset that he doesn't accept what they're saying. As Prabhupada begins his purport, King Vena was so foolish that he accused the saintly persons of being inexperienced like small children. In other words, he was accusing them of not having perfect knowledge. This is a very significant point also. We should not very strongly argue our position unless our knowledge is perfect. Krishna says in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Atma parijnana mayo vivado hiastiti nastiti bhidarthanishtha. If we are bhidarthanishtha, fixed in our position of differing with someone, evidently on many occasions solely for the purpose of differing with someone. Yes, nasavrishir yasya matam nabhinnam. Same word is used. That's called separatism. If we are attached to arguing from a position of incomplete realization, atma aparijnanamaya vivada, then Krishna says, such persons have actually turned away from me, and they're wasting their time. You need only open up the internet and do a web search on Hare Krishna to find out some examples of this. I was shocked when the internet first came out. Well, not when it first came out, but early on, I was shocked to see how much ISKCON is, more often than not, I think, misrepresented by the internet. Now it's maybe a little better than it used to be, but there used to be so many arguments and controversies and scandals. All over the net, you would get only negative things. Because people are attached to arguing their faith on the basis of incomplete realization. So Vena, unfortunately, he presumed that these sages were arguing from that position. In fact, they were at least authorized, at least they were giving good advice, but he didn't accept it. He couldn't put his faith in that. As we've said before, the demons, it's their nature that they have a difficult time putting their faith in others. So this also allowed him to reject their advice, because ultimately he didn't want to surrender. So sometimes we find that when we don't want to accept good advice, we try to assassinate the character of the person who's giving it. So this seems to be what Vena was doing, at least indirectly. So these are some things we can think about here. Prabhupada has commented, our acharyas don't say much on this verse. They just basically clarify what the analogy is here, what the simile is, what the words mean. So I'll stop now, unless anybody has any questions or comments. Archit Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for a nice class. The simile seems to fall apart a bit because, as far as I can recall, these sages are not advocating demigod worship. Where does that come in? He's comparing them to an unchaste woman who leaves the husband who's maintaining her at home to satisfy a paramour outside for just sense gratification, nothing else in return. But the sages didn't approach him to tell him to become a demigod worshiper, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, as far as I understand or experience, it seems that they were telling him to worship God, the Supreme.
Yeah.
So how does he draw this analogy of the demigods? Because he's saying that if you don't worship me, but then you go to some demigods, then it's like approaching a paramour.
Yeah, I was thinking about this also. It seems like just in... Well, there's several things that we can look at here. In general, the king has the responsibility to accommodate everyone, even if those persons may not be up to the standard of pure Vaishnavism. He has to give them some quarter, as long as they agree to at least abide by the dictates of the Vedic literature. For that reason, demigod worship is authorized. It's not advisable, but it's authorized. And the sages, because of that de facto situation, they're also encouraging people should at least fulfill their material desires in a dependent manner, in a submissive and authorized manner. That's what I see here. Even though they would prefer and have said so in the past that people worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have to recognize the fact of the matter that not everybody's willing to do that.
When two persons argue a philosophical point of view, at least Vedically it's recommended that you quote as a reference some authority. So
I'm having trouble hearing you.
When two people or when two persons argue, at least Vedically speaking, it's always recommended to quote or give a reference
to
something that they argue. But when, let's say, for example, Christianity or our point of view, if you try to argue something, they might not necessarily accept your authority. So how do you go about?
You're asking that in spiritual circles, as Prabhupada says in his purport to Bhagavad Gita chapter 17, I think it's verse 15, we have to immediately quote the Shastra to uphold what we're saying or what we're advocating. Whereas when we're dealing with people who don't accept Vedic authority, that doesn't hold any water with them. Then you have to fall back on the lesser pramanas. There are three pramanas. Pramana means evidence or proof. The best thing is shabda. If people accept authoritative assertion, that's called shabda. Not everyone does that. Or, more often than not, people accept so-called authoritative assertion, which is not actually all that authoritative. There are tamasic religions in the world who accept irreligion as religion, and they're also dharma maninas. And there are people who are very firmly convinced that it is the yuga dharma to kill anyone who disagrees with their particular interpretation of their scriptures. That's tamasic. So therefore we have to appeal to their reason. Or, well, there are different ways of dealing. It depends a lot on the audience that you're dealing with. It's said that when we're dealing with brahmanas, people who are intellectual, people who are a little smart, who are pious also, virtuous, spiritually advanced, we can quote from Shastra, as you said. With people who are not like that, people who are more ambitious, who like to control, we may have to flatter them. People who only see things in terms of commerce, we have to bribe them. And people who only understand personal sense gratification, we feed them. So we have restaurants, we have book distribution, we have various modes of preaching Krishna consciousness, and they're all intended to somehow or other win one over to the process which will purify one to the extent that one can accept Vedic authority. Is that okay? Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.